Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, or healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. Today, we'll be speaking with Kimberly Alexander. Kimberly's life was turned upside down in 2010 when her husband, former professional football player Elijah Alexander, was diagnosed with multiple myeloma. Since his diagnosis and eventual passing, Kimberly has been an advocate in the blood cancer space, especially when it comes to minority health. Your husband was a professional football player before his diagnosis. So what was your life like before that?
I think it was pretty normal, but I guess it was normal in terms of what a typical professional athlete's lifestyle is like. You know, within the NFL circle, it's very common to have to move around, and you have kids, and you kind of take your kids from city to city, and your whole entire life revolves around the NFL and making sure that, making sure that my husband was healthy and happy. And whenever the season was over, we would go back to, you know, just kind of living until the next season started. And he had stopped playing football maybe about 2 or 3 years before he was diagnosed with myeloma. And so during those couple of years in between, he walked away from football. He retired and had started a couple of companies and was coaching our son's football, baseball, and basketball teams. And he was just a typical dad. We were just kind of living a typical life down here in the suburbs of Dallas, Texas. It was very normal, by my standards. And then everything just kind of changed in 2005.
So tell me about that day in 2005. How did he first come to be diagnosed?
Well, it's interesting. Elijah had been complaining about pain in his feet for quite a while after he retired from football, and he'd been visiting doctors here in the Dallas area. A couple of them had told him, you know what, you played football for a really long time. Your feet probably hurt because you played football. So he was just kind of dealing with it. And one weekend he was going to Costa Rica on a golf trip with some friends. And during that flight over to Costa Rica, he became violently ill on the plane. And so his friends had a doctor come into the hotel in Costa Rica, and it was that doctor that ran some tests and told him, you know, something is very, very wrong. Your numbers are really off. You need to get back to the United States immediately and get in to see a physician there. So he gets back to Dallas. I had him lined up to go to a doctor's appointment, and he actually didn't make that appointment because He passed out. He kind of, something happened. He was at home. And when I came home to figure out why he didn't show up for his appointment, I found him on the ground. And so I took him to one of those little local e-care centers to try to find out what was going on. And once they stabilized him there, he was transported to a regular hospital. And it was the emergency room doctor in that hospital that said, you know what, I'm recognizing these symptoms. I think I know what this is. I'm going to run some tests and stick around to see what the results are, and I'll let you know. And sure enough, that night, Elijah was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, which, of course, at the time was a disease neither one of us had even heard of before. It was a very convoluted situation.
So why do you think it was overlooked for quite some time and just written off to him being, you know, a professional athlete or something else?
I guess because the typical myeloma patient tends to be older. You know, at the time, Elijah was 35 years old. He still looked like he could play football. You know, he was a linebacker. And so he was 6'3", about 220 pounds. And so for the most part, he looked completely healthy. And so I guess that's why so many people really didn't think to do blood work. They just kind of dismissed the pain as being something football related. And unfortunately, that meant that when Elijah was diagnosed, by the time it was caught, he was actually at the worst stage of the disease. He was diagnosed with what's called stage 3B multiple myeloma, because at that point it had started to affect his kidneys.
What happened after the diagnosis came?
Well, after the diagnosis came, it was just a complete whirlwind. Everything just seemed to go in fast forward motion. He had to get his kidney stabilized in order for him to start treatment. He had to have a biopsy done. And then he started chemo like within days of being diagnosed. So everything just happened at lightning speed. And then in February of 2006, he underwent a stem cell transplant. So that helped him tremendously, but that was also a very major procedure. But I was glad that he had it done because it did extend his life for a while.
So before his passing, did he start to work in the advocacy field, particularly for multiple myeloma?
He absolutely did. Elijah, actually, during the process of recovering from his stem cell transplant, decided that he really did want to do more for the cancer community. He wanted to help other myeloma patients. He wanted to help kids with cancer. And in the process of doing all of that, he began to realize how important it was to not only educate the public about myeloma, but educate other patients as well. And so he started doing speaking engagements and just being very vocal about his condition. And I tell people all the time, he was an incredible cancer patient, in my opinion, just in terms of how he handled his diagnosis. He wasn't one of those people that, you know, got the bad news and let it beat him or get him down. He still remained very active. He would work out. He would go play golf. He would go on trips and do, you know, spend quality time with our kids and with our family. And in the process of all of that, he would go out and talk to other cancer patients and just get really involved in the cancer community.
After his passing, you started to do a lot of advocacy work as well. Can you tell me a little bit about the advocacy work that you've been doing, specifically, I guess, with minority patients and the minority population?
Let me back up a little bit. Actually, while Elijah was still here and so involved in the cancer community, I was watching him, and I was able to meet some incredible people along the way, and I saw the impact that he had on so many others. And so when we lost him, I felt like it'd be a shame if I didn't continue doing a lot of the things that he was doing. So I felt like it was in my best interest just to pick up the baton and keep going. I knew that there was a lot of work that needed to be done in terms of helping others. Our experience with myeloma was such a shock to our family that I really didn't want other people to have to feel the same way we did when he was diagnosed. I mean, we were completely sucker punched and blindsided. And so I felt like if I could help others by sharing our story, that maybe it would help them when it came time to try to figure out what the next step is once they find out that, you know, they had somebody in their life that is dealing with myeloma. And so for me, when it became, you know, time for me to learn more about the disease and the more time I spent with other patients and people in the medical field, that was when I started to learn about how myeloma affects the African American community. At the time when Elijah was diagnosed, I didn't realize that it was the number one blood cancer affecting African Americans. And so in the time that I've spent over the past few years, I've just learned so much. And because of the things that I've learned, I felt like it was really important to not only share that information, but try to come up with solutions to make sure that things happen so that we can change how African Americans are having to deal with myeloma. There aren't a lot of African Americans that are participating in clinical trials, which is part of the problem. African Americans don't receive stem cell transplants at the same rate as other races, and that's a problem. And so there's some things that really do need to change. And if my voice can help do that, then that's what I want to do.
Of all your advocacy work that you've done, is there one thing that has made you proudest?
Absolutely. I really have enjoyed being a part of the Standing in the Gap program. That's Standing in the Gap with two A's. It's for African Americans, and it's a program that raises awareness about multiple myeloma in the African American community. And it has allowed me to meet some incredible people and to share information with people who really, really need it. And so I like to forward people to their Standing in the Gap Facebook page. I like to, you know, tell them about additional resources like Myeloma Central and just kind of let people know that there are other ways out there to get information about myeloma so that they know they're not alone. They know where they can get information that will educate them on what they're going through and let them know about some other resources that will help them get through it.
So you mentioned that African-American patients don't participate in clinical trials as frequently, and they're less likely to get a stem cell transplant. Why is that, and what do we need to do moving forward to change that?
Well, I think education has a lot to do with the issue regarding clinical trials. I mean, I think there's a lot of fear out there because in the past, you know, African-Americans have been fully aware of stories where clinical trials didn't help people in our community. They would hurt them. And so I think that it has caused a certain fear and apprehension when it comes to getting involved. But the downside to that is it's not allowing physicians and people who can make a difference in a myeloma patient's life to get the information that they need to help come up with treatment options and cures. And so I think the only way that we can really make a difference in that spectrum is to talk about it and try to walk them through the process and let them know that, you know, the things that happened in the past don't necessarily happen today, and why it's such a need for them to be involved with clinical trials. And the same goes for stem cell transplants. It's a matter of educating them and letting them know about the procedure and why they need it. And even educating physicians in that matter. Just there's still just a lot of unknowns when it comes to myeloma. And it's incredible to me when I talk to myeloma patients in one market who have had one experience. And then I talk to some in another area who are dealing with physicians who don't necessarily come up with the same treatment options. And so I think it's just a matter of myeloma not being as known, I guess that's the best way to put it. The education or the information that's out there about it just isn't the same across the board. The way it's treated isn't the same. The way it's talked about in the doctor's offices isn't the same. And so it ends up affecting patients and their options when it comes to treatment.
Okay, so as you know, April is Minority Health Month. Do you have any comments on Minority Health Month or anything special planned?
Well, we're actually working on some things for Minority Health Month, and I'm really excited about it because, to me, it just kind of gives an opportunity to talk about a subject that really does need to be discussed. And I've been paying attention to a lot of the other programs and things that are going on throughout the month, and I want to make sure that I chime in on it. But to be very honest with you, you know, even though April is Minority Health Month, the subject is something that is so important to me that I feel like, you know what, we need to talk about this all the time. So while I will talk about it more in April, I will definitely continue to talk about myeloma's effect on the African-American community whenever I have the opportunity to do so, because I think it is just that important.
Join us next week when we'll speak with the four winners of CURE's Ovarian Cancer Heroes program. They include a physician, nurse navigator, and two patient-turned-advocates who have made a difference in the lives of women fighting ovarian cancer.
The CURE Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of CURE magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine.